Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kit of Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kit of products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Happy Monday, everybody. Thank you for spending the time with us. This is another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast. An unfortunate weekend series where we dropped 2 out of 3 against the Twins. A lot to discuss. Joining us on the show tonight, way out west from the City of Angels, is Charlie. Charlie, how are you doing tonight, and where can the fans find you on Twitter/X?
Doing well, thank you for asking. Smith_MLB is where you can find me. A lot of exciting things that happened this weekend, not all Boston Red Sox related, but we can get to that later on.
Ooh, guy knows how to put together a lead. Also joining us on the show tonight from the Grand Strand, aka Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you doing tonight, and where can the fans find you?
I am doing excellent. I'm surprised you knew the local nickname for Myrtle, but props for that. You can find me and all of my mischief at CushmanMLB. You can find sometimes even more mischief on the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Our Instagram account went over 1,000 followers recently. I think we're over 1,100 now, so that is rapidly growing. You can find us there. You can find my baseball-only Facebook account at Terry Talks Sox. And you can find our YouTube channel, which has had a very interesting week. We have three guys, three new hosts, Chris, Andres, and I'm so bad. Who's the third one? I'm on the spot. Oh, no. My apologies. But the interesting thing, though, is Nick Face no longer with the podcast in any capacity. That was his decision. He wanted to move on, do his own thing. And yeah, and actually, excellent news. So Nick was the other one I forgot. So we have a new guy named Nick Collier, and phenomenal. He reminds me of Charlie. He's Johnny on the spot when it comes to stats. And so now we only have one Nick, so there will be far less confusion in the YouTube war room. My apologies for not rattling them all off. And we're in the process of getting two new hosts for the post-game aspect of the YouTube channel. So, so interesting couple of weeks on that end of the content creating.
I was going to say, a lot of fun developments to follow. But yes, as I mentioned, unfortunately, the Sox lost 2 out of 3 this weekend. Taking a look at the standings, we are still in third place, 3 games above 500, 4.5 back from the Orioles, which have a 1-game lead over the Yankees, a 6.5 game lead over the Rays, and then the Blue Jays are, surprisingly, I would say at this point, in last place, a full 7.5 games back from the Orioles. But you all know the drill. When the Red Sox lose the series, we have to flip the order. That means we're going to be starting with our duds for the weekend. Charlie, a fantastic leadoff guy, why don't you give us your dud for the weekend?
I want to sandwich this take by saying we're going to start off with some good news before we get into the duds and then talk about the studs. The Boston Bruins did not make history by becoming the first team in all professional sports in the United States of going up 3-1 and blowing a series 2 years in a row by defeating the Toronto Maple Leafs 2-1 in overtime and advancing to the next round against the Florida Panthers. So super excited, super pumped for the Boston Bruins. Wanted to give them a little shout out right here. Pasa did his job and got that nice OT goal. Anywho, my dud for this series, and this pains me to say it, but we keep it real on this podcast. Tyler O'Neill, who unfortunately went 2 for 10 in the series, a single double, had two sombreros, games one and game two as well. Just didn't really see the same level of pop that we had seen from him. But the good news is that other people were able to pick him up in game three. But six strikeouts in a series is really rough. You know, three game set, that's two a game on the average. So not too great, but I like to just look at this as a little blip on the radar because we all know what Tyler O'Neill can do. He's got 9 dingers on the year, leads the team, and is second in Major League Baseball. So, Tyler, dud for me.
Terry.
You know, I mean, he should be our best right-handed bat. Perhaps Grissom or Rafaela can emerge eventually. But not a great series. The strikeouts way up. I'm trying to see where he was at last series. Not super robust either. Had a couple of 2-strikeout games. Was 2 for 11. So kind of on a cold streak. That is kind of part of who he is. When his batting average, when he was hitting 340 with like an upper 400s on base, you knew that wasn't sustainable. So I'm not sure where the mean is, you know, where he's going to level out. And but hopefully he'll get it back together. It's just hard to know where the offense is really going to come from outside of, I mean, if Duran has a quiet series, that seems, he seems to be the catalyst. If he's quiet, it's, you know, it's hard to put runs up.
So one thing that I wanted to add also about O'Neill is if you look at his numbers in relation to last year, he only played in 72 games. He had 231. His batting average is way low in 72 games. He had 67 strikeouts and 238 at-bats. So we're going to talk about stats for a second. That's just under 30% clip. Right now he's got 30 out of 91, which is, again, about a 33% clip right there. So he's a little bit higher this year. Not something that I'm too worried about. But, you know, last year, 72 games, 9 homers, 21 RBIs. This year, 26 games, 9 home runs, 13 RBIs. All of his home runs except for one have been by way of the solo job. So I'm not too nervous. It was weird because he was just, I'm going to hit a home run, I'm going to hit a single, but not a double and a triple. Now we've actually seen a couple doubles on the board as well. His OPS is still over 1,000. And he did miss a couple of days, obviously, with that concussion and whatnot. But I really don't think that this is a point of concern for me. He is our best right-handed hitter. And it's kind of hard to dispute that right now. I mean, you had 9 home runs. You don't walk into 9 by accident. So I think the strikeout numbers, while they were really, really bad this series, unless they trend in this direction for a consistent manner, before this series, he was well below last year's expectations or averages because, you know, you struck out 6 times out of 10 at-bats. That's not really good. He was 24 for, you know, 80 before that. So you look at that, that's maybe close to 30% still. The way I look at it is I think this is just a bad series, just an unlucky series against them. I'm hoping that Tyler O'Neill is going to be able to flip the page and do what he's done in the past, at least this year.
A few things to mention here. One, we got to tip our cap to Charlie, too. You know, the captain of the O'Neill fan club, the man is literally wearing an O'Neill shirt right now, is the first one to say, hey, he didn't have a good series. So, you know, we got to give credit where credit's due. But the other thing I want to mention is this was always the other shoe to drop with Tyler O'Neill. As Terry mentioned, you know, the power numbers were up, the home run numbers were up, which are all great. But we all also seen in previous stints, you know, the guy can go cold for a little while. And, you know, while it was a great pitching weekend for the Twins, a lot of their top end starters, we knew that this offense was going to falter, and consistency is something that this team is really going to struggle with, you know, outside of, I would say, Rafi and maybe Duran at this point. We haven't really seen anybody on this team put together a full 162 where they found level water. It was hot streaks, cold streaks, to where the numbers might have leveled out pretty reasonably, but we were never getting the 1-for-4 type games pretty, you know, I guess routinely for that matter. But there wasn't a lot to love from this weekend, as I'm sure we're going to cover with a couple of other gentlemen. And so you know, hopefully we can just kind of put this one behind us, get focused on the Atlanta series, kind of turn the page. Sometimes there's just ballparks that don't work well for you. Sometimes there's ballparks that do. And, you know, knock on wood, unfortunately for us, Fenway seems to be one of the ones that works for O'Neill. And so hopefully we can miss Minnesota in the future for Tyler O'Neill's sake. Anything else you gentlemen wanted to add on Tyler O'Neill at this point? Nope. Then we'll kick it over to Terry. Terry, who was your dud for this weekend?
Just a nugget before I get into that. We don't even see the Twins again until late September. So it'll be a while. Chances are it won't matter. But and one other nugget, and this will kind of pertain to my dud. I watched the Twins broadcast all weekend. I'm just tired of the Red Sox. I'm just tired of Nesson. Tired of the musical chairs with who's going to be working with O'Brien. And I'm not a big O'Brien guy. So I've kind of just been dabbling with other broadcast crews. And the Giants crew didn't overwhelm me. I mean, they weren't bad, but they weren't invigorating. And I kind of felt the same way about the Twins crew as well. Justin Morneau is their color guy, though. I thought that was interesting. He won the home run derby, was, you know, a good player for them in the, you know.
Was a great player for them. Was an absolute banger. I think he won an MVP award for Minnesota, too.
I think he did, too.
He won 1 year.
And he won a home.
He won one in, sorry, go ahead.
And a home run derby as well.
Yeah, he had clout. And if I'm not mistaken, where did he end up? Was it Pittsburgh after that?
I thought it was maybe Colorado. No,
maybe it was Colorado. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, me either.
But anyway, yeah. Sorry.
So anyway, one of the things they pointed out, and this was the nugget that I took the long way to get to, the Twins, when it comes to off-speed pitches, and the Red Sox are an off-speed staff, 70% of their pitches are off-speed. They only throw 30% four-seamers. But the Twins see the second most pitches of any other team in Major League Baseball when it comes to off speed. So this was not a, so my dud for the series is actually going to be Tanner Houck, and I'm not going to destroy him because he hasn't been terrible, but this wasn't a good matchup for a guy who throws a ton of off speed. And when you're like Houck, you better command, if they're going to sit back and be patient, you better be commanding. You better be finding that strike zone, because a patient offense, I'm afraid, could be Tanner Houck's kryptonite, you know, throughout the season. His pitch count's going to get high. I don't think it got drastically high, but they kind of got to him there in the seventh inning, and Reese McGuire didn't do him any favors with an errant throw to second base, which allowed a run to come in and score. But Houck did walk to that inning. And he only struck out four the whole outing. So my big concern here, though, is as this program continues into the season, this Andrew Bailey pitching program, eventually the book is going to be out on it and the league will adjust to it. And sometimes it takes more than a year to do it, but they will adjust. A guy I keep going back to is Rick Porcello. He had a very good Cy Young year, was trash in all of 2017. And then in 2018, the Red Sox and other teams across the league were pounding the top of the zone with fastballs and were racking up a ton of strikeouts. And Porcello kind of had a bit of a resurgence that year. That was his second best year with the Red Sox. And eventually the league adjusted to that and they started crushing those high fastballs. So I'm just a little bit concerned here, you know, that I'm hoping there's another phase of this Andrew Bailey pitching program that'll be put into place to kind of keep the rest of the league off balance. But not a stellar outing from Houck. I mean, he gave us a chance to win. The offense wasn't super robust that night. I mean, we had double-digit strikeouts, across the lineup. So wasn't great. Wasn't a super great performance from him. Not overly concerned, but it's going to be fascinating to see the rest of, you know, or at least the next couple of months, how his trajectory is, you know, throughout that time.
So to add on to that, I'm going to say this. I'm not really concerned about Tanner Houck, and here's why. So in seven performances this year, he's had a quality start in 6 of 7. That used to be a thing a couple of years ago. As I'm sure, Terry, you remember, I was complaining and crying. Like, we can't even get a quality start. Like, we're lucky if we get one out of a rotation, because we had absolute bums. Like, back in the day, Garrett Richards was there, Martin Perez was there, and they were just laboring to get to the third or fourth thing. It just wasn't working out. So when Garrett Whitlock does not allow an earned run or a run, he wins the game. He's 3-0 in those games. He's 0-3 in games that he allows one earned run or more. This is a guy who has a sub-2 ERA on the season. It's been 7 starts, and people still haven't figured him out yet. Granted, it's only the first week of May, but I'm going to say this. 2 walks, I clocked 5 Ks in that game for him. He's still only given up 1 home run. So however you want to look at it against Tanner Houck, I'm not going to throw, and I don't think you're throwing shade, but I'm not going to say I'm concerned until we see back-to-back poor performances, which hasn't happened all year. Tanner Houck went 6 innings, no earned runs, 6 innings, no earned runs, 5 2/3, 4 earned runs. So to your point, not a great game, and that was against the Angels, kind of a blippy game. Cleveland, 3-hit complete game shutout. 6 innings against Cleveland, 2 earned runs, 1 earned run in 6 2/3 against the Chicago Cubs, struck out 9 in that game. He struck out 9 or more in 3 games so far this year. And then this just was another game that wasn't great. By record and by stats so far this year, because I'm a numbers person, numbers don't lie, it looks like he's probably going to bounce back in his next appearance. 3 earned runs in 6 innings, if you get that out of a starter, you'd think, okay, my team should be able to put together 3 or 4 runs to win the game for me. I'm doing everything I possibly can to try to keep this team to under 3 runs. It just was an unlucky performance. But again, 7 starts, he's given up only 10 total earned runs, I think, and he's only given up 1 home run. He also rarely walks guys. So he's only had 3 games in which he has walked a batter. He's got 41 punchouts and, what is it, 46 punchouts, 7 walks, and 45 innings pitched. So the guy's money. I think this is just another blip. I'm really looking forward to seeing Tanner pitch. And honestly, no one in their mind thought that Tanner Houck or anybody in the rotation was going to be doing what they're doing. The Andrew Bailey pitching program is absolutely incredible. And I'm buying into it right now. I am buying into it.
Well, there's no easier month in the season than April. There's not going to be another month. So we're only one start into May, but
I hear you.
And what's he going to look like against the rest of the division as well?
What's he going to look like against harder teams too?
No, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Right.
I'm pleasantly surprised. That's where I'm at.
Me too.
But
I'm pleasantly surprised.
But
I'm
still skeptical, you know, despite that. So we'll see.
Fair.
I mean, here I am in the middle again, right? You guys both have made some great points. There's not a lot of meat left on this bone, as they say. You know, there is reason to be optimistic. I don't think in any of our wildest dreams did we think that this was going to be the type of start to a season that Tanner Houck would have had. But to Terry's point, you know, it was a pretty soft schedule to start. Even the good teams that we were facing weren't necessarily heavy hitters in the offensive production realm. But hey, you know, for a guy to land in the dud column, pitch 100 pitches into the 7th inning, give up 4 total runs, 3 earned. From where we've come in the past couple of years, we will take that gladly. It is a dud-worthy performance for sure, especially with the standards that Houck has given us at this point in time. You know, but the defense didn't help him, and, you know, Micah had made kind of a great trend. He likes to post the records of the team when we don't commit an error. And I think we're like 14-1 or 15-1 or something like that when the team doesn't commit an error. And unfortunately, the defense is kind of coming back to bite us at times. But the number I think that we really need to pay attention with Houck is the number of walks, right? 2 walks in this start is definitely higher than he has been as of recent, but it's still lower than it was in all of his previous seasons. This is a guy that would have 4, 5, 6 walks sometimes in fewer innings than he pitched on Friday, if I'm not mistaken. Excuse me. And so, for sure, you know, Terry brought up a great point. This team loves to sit on off-speed, loves to get that pitch count up, and that kind of was just a bad combination, a bad mixture for what our pitching program has been doing the first month of the season. So, you know, hopefully with this game of adjustments, we can kind of figure out something to move it to. Maybe we start bringing in the straighter pitches, the quicker pitches, and, you know, stop relying on the off-speed so much, or get a little bit more of a pitch mix-up and a pitch variance. But the Bailey program has been working, right? You know, the starting rotation has kept us in games, kept us around, and that's all we can really ask for, because this was, you know, a glaring weakness, a glaring, you know, sore spot on this rotation, on the team buildup coming into the season. So for us to be leading the league, or, you know, close to it in terms of starting rotation ERA, I think is a very pleasant surprise. Any other items that you gentlemen would like to add on Tanner Houck?
None.
All righty. Then we'll kick it over to my dud for the weekend. And this is an individual that hasn't landed on the dud list yet, I don't believe, at least not on the weekend crew. Willier Abreu. The guy has been scorching hot since he's been given, you know, a more consistent opportunity. He's been making great defensive plays, you know, timely hits, big hits, extra base hits, but didn't really have a great weekend. 2 for 11, 1 RBI, 2 walks, and unfortunately 6 strikeouts. You know, I think he's batting 200 on the month of May, 261 over his last 7. So he's definitely cooling off a little bit. Maybe the opposing pitchers, you know, kind of see some holes in his swing, see some holes in his approach. I know he's chasing up and up and away a decent bit as well. So hopefully we can get in the lab, make some tweaks, be a little bit more patient, give away that upper corner, force pitchers to dot it if they're going to get him. But, you know, it could also be that he faced the Twins rotation this weekend that is pretty sturdy, and he got some of their better pitchers between Lopez and Ryan. We saw some other guys strike out a bit as well. We mentioned it with O'Neill. I'm just chalking it up to a strong rotation, a new guy that's coming up. They're starting to get some tape on him. They're starting to get the book out on him a little bit. Pitchers are making the adjustments, and, you know, he's got to make the adjustment back. Not too concerned. This is a guy that plays a lot of confidence, a lot of swagger, you know, a lot of energy, and I think he brings a lot to the table. He's definitely one of Terry's favorite guys, and, you know, somebody that I think we can kind of build around in the future. Charlie?
Yeah, so, I mean, for Abreu, obviously, you know, not a great week, not as bad as O'Neill, but did have a sombrero himself in the first game of the series. So 2 for 11, had 6 strikeouts as well overall. But I'm not really too worried. I mean, this is a guy that was hitting over 300 just a couple days ago. So I think this is, again, just, you know, the series didn't work out for us. And overall, this has been a guy that's been absolutely clutch. I mean, you saw him have a 4-hit game. You saw him have a 3-hit game in, 72 hours. The guy's doing damage and raises batting average from, you know, 200 to 300 in a week's time. So last month, all of April, hit over 330. And this month so far, in a limited sample size, is hitting obviously not 300. That's why he's hitting below 300 at the moment. But I'm not gonna poo-poo him. I'm also really, really happy about what we've been able to see so far. You know, Terry, I think is very good about being level-headed and you know, holding expectations, I think, close, because we can sometimes forget that the season is 162 games. After 1 month, we get all jittery, and sure, yeah, we'd be a playoff team right now, but there's still 130 games to go. So we've still got a lot of work to do, and I'm excited to see what the ceiling is for Willier Abreu. We're obviously not there yet, and there's going to be a lot more growth and improvement for this young man, and that's it. You know, I'm not going to bash him. I'll leave it there.
He was white hot last series against the Giants. Well, I shouldn't say white hot, but he did have a 3-hit game and only struck out once that whole series. Struck out 6 out of 11 this series, as Charlie was getting at. And it's not, wasn't great, but it's also not fair to lean too heavily on a young player like that, who's been as productive as he is. He's leading the Red Sox in doubles right now. I just noticed that. Rafaela and Devers are only one behind him, as is Jaren Duran. But the guy's been a revelation, and there was one at bat against Lopez on Saturday, and I forget how many pitches it went, but Abreu ended up winning the battle. And it's just fun to kind of watch him impose his will on pitchers. And I don't think he's going to be on the wrong end of the mental battle in that aspect. I think he's very locked in at the plate. I love his swing. And, you know, if he was a little bit more productive, you know, the outcome could have looked a little bit different. But at the same time, you know, some of these other guys have to step up and do their part as well.
Yeah, I think also one more thing. I'm a lot more forgiving to players that try to enhance all aspects of their game. So, yeah, you're hitting the ball. You're working on your fielding. You're stealing bases. This isn't a one-trick pony. This is someone who's trying to improve himself collectively, not only in fielding, hitting for average, hitting for power, stealing bases, and just being an overall great teammate. So, again, if he was not hitting the ball, not hitting home runs, not stealing bases, causing a lot of errors, then, yeah, there's room for, you know, a little bit more judgment. But like you said, Terry, to your point, and I support that, really hard to come down on a young player like this who's still coming into his own. We're not even there yet. We are not even at his prime or his peak. So there's still the book isn't even written for this man. So I'm really excited to see what happens. This is easily a 2020 candidate if he can put things together, minimum, baseline. So if you can get 20 homers, 20 plus stolen bases out of a kid like this, 80 RBIs, maybe more, hit 300, dude, that's a win. That is a dub right there for me.
A lot to be excited about for sure. And, you know, as you mentioned, Charlie, it's still the very beginning of his career. He's learning on the fly at the major league level. And, you know, he kind of had a rough patch at the beginning when he was getting inconsistent playing time. And for him to hit his stride as quickly as he did to be as white hot as Terry mentioned, I think is encouraging and you know, something that we can definitely think about. Terry, Charlie, anything else that you would like to mention?
As far as dishonorables go, the first baseman we got there, Garrett Cooper, 0-7 on the series. So that majestic Fenway uniform isn't, you know, creating any magic for him, you know, playing for a legendary franchise. You can see some people show up and they'll be, they'll at least be hot right out of the gates, but that's not him. Zach Short only played in the finale 0-4. I'm impressed we even won today, because you wake up and you see that lineup, and I'm a late sleeper on Sundays, and O'Neill's not in it. Zach Short's playing third. You've lost the first two games. Why are you winning the third game of the series? But it happened. And so a couple of Dudley performances there. I forget his first name, but Uesawa didn't have a great outing, piggybacking off of Hauk. Just going through the list here. Nobody.
It's Naoyuki. Aoyuki?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it, so apologies if I'm mispronouncing it. But, you know, he had a really good first game against San Francisco, and I think he mentioned it was the first time they asked him after the game, oh, what was it like pitching back-to-back performances? And it was his first time that he'd ever done it. He'd never pitched in back-to-back games. So, again, 30 years old, four innings, one run on two hits, three strikeouts, couple of walks, no complaints. Like, the pitching has been amazing. Let's just be honest here. It's still, you know, first week of May. Temper expectations. Yes, Terry, I heard you. But I'm excited and I want to celebrate the high. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I mean, two innings from Uesawa, two hits, two walks. Did manage to strike out two, but gave up an earned run. and a couple of Houck's runs came in with him on the mound. So not the best outing, and if he has a few more like it within a short time frame, it wouldn't surprise me to see him either optioned or DFA'd. I'm not quite sure what his status is as far as that goes, but that's about all I have for dishonorables.
Well, then we will cut the negativity there, turn it to my favorite part of the evening, flip the card over to the studs for the weekend. The optimist in me is thrilled to be talking about this. Charlie, who was your stud from the weekend series?
I am so excited that I get to talk about this because if I'm not mistaken, Cooper Criswell was a player that Terry was excited about early this year. Didn't you mention that you were happy about Criswell joining? Or no, did I completely botch that?
You botched it.
There was a player that you mentioned earlier this year, and it's been months since we talked about it. Who was it that you added on your fantasy team and you were excited? Was it Zach Littell, maybe? Maybe it was Zach Littell.
He's a Tampa Bay Ray, but yes.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay, I apologize. Anyways, Cooper Criswell comes out here, allows one run on five hits. The only run he allowed was a solo home run, which was a shot, and there's no question. You can't look at it any other way. Allows a walk, strikes out five in 4 1/3 innings, 80 pitches, is still getting stretched out. Angel Hernandez is behind the dish. So already you're thinking there is an opportunity for theatrics, ejections, and really bad calls and some mean tweets. That really wasn't the case. Angel Hernandez did a really, really good job. The reason why I made Cooper Criswell my stud for this one was because you have the bases loaded and you have no outs. And I'm sitting here watching this saying, oh my God, this inning is about to get ugly. Kepler gets an infield single. Correa rips one to left. Then there was, I forget who was it, hit the
Trevor
single.
Trevor Larnach.
Right, Larnach hit one to right field. Then you have Castro and Santana strikeout swinging. And you have Miranda at the dish, who has not been doing great, a little comebacker, and then it's out at home, inning over. You go up, bases loaded, no outs, and you go punch out, and then you get the assist in getting the last out to end the inning in the second. We're still at it 0-0 right now. I have nothing bad that I can possibly say about this performance. And earlier this year, when we did our preseason predictions, I think it was Jason that picked the Twins. I could be wrong, but I think Jason picked the Twins this year to take it away. I don't know, man. There's just something really special about it. If you look at Cooper Criswell, this is someone that all three of us looked at it, was like, Cooper Criswell, Joe Ryan, this is going to be an L performance. And we thought, you know, Joe Ryan's one of the best. Why would he ever lose it? But Criswell actually, in his last two starts, has given us five innings, back-to-back performances, didn't allow a run in either one of those games. One of those games was Cleveland. They're not a bad team. Second was the Giants. We all thought was going to do a little, they were a little bit better than they actually were, but he's now given us almost, you know, five innings and three straight performances, and he's only allowed one earned run. So another candidate with a sub two ERA, Tanner Houck, 1.99, Cooper Criswell, 1.74. The only issue is that we just don't have that distance yet. We still need to see him go, you know, quality start, six innings or more. And so we're just not seeing that. They're cutting him right at that 80 pitch mark. So I'd like to see him get stretched out a little bit more if he feels comfortable. If that's not a place that he's good at, then I think your spot in the rotation needs to be given back to somebody that can handle that. And you can just become like a long reliever, because if you're able to go four innings in relief, dude, I'm good with that. You know, if we have a starter that only goes five, you can get that four inning save. I'm cool. No complaints. You won't hear me say a peep. But right now, hard to say anything poor about Cooper Criswell. Guy's only given up two home runs on the year. You know, it's another recurring trend. Not walking a lot of guys, not giving up a lot of home runs. It translates to wins and good innings, and sometimes special innings where you load up the bases, you get two strikeouts, followed by a ground out, and you get out of the jam unscathed. That's a masterclass when you can do that. Very few pitchers can do that. Not a super a vet. This is a guy who's only been pitching for a couple years and really only had a couple starts under his belt. So really quality performance. I know it wasn't a quality start, but a quality inning, super impressive. Can't take anything away from him.
I also thought in that second inning, I'm like, oh, here we go. It's finally going to happen. Criswell's going to put up a five spot and he's going to be the journeyman that he's always been. And he ended up getting out of it, you know, and I'll give him credit for staying composed. Alex Cora, though, didn't seem to want him to face the lineup the third time through. And right as it came up, he was taken out of the game for Brennan Bernardino. So, but it worked. I mean, it was a 3-1 game. And later on, who was it? Rafaela and then Grissom each drove in a couple of runs and kind of put some distance up there. So it took the pressure off of the pitching staff after. So I'm not quite sure how the rest of the season will play out. We've got Nick Pivetta coming back on, it looks like Wednesday. We're showing a TBD there, but I'm almost positive that will be his return. And then Crawford on Tuesday. But question for you guys. Either him or Winkowski are going to lose their spot. And Bayo actually could be back as early as the following week. But who should lose it first? I mean, go ahead, Charlie.
So I'm just going to say really quickly, before we say that either one of them are going to lose their spot, unless both of those guys are 100% to come back in, we don't need them to come back early. What's the point of coming back early and just getting shelled if you're not 100% ready? If one of them goes out of the lineup, I would assume you're probably pulling Criswell and you're going to keep Winkowski. Call me crazy. You have somebody who's been a starter and can prove that he can be that spot starter guy, and someone who's trying to come into him to his own, but he's 27 years old, almost 28 years old, if I'm not mistaken. And I think because he hasn't been there as long, he's going to be more inclined to be that team player or have that team player mentality. But when Pivetta comes back and Bayo comes back, they're both gone. So it becomes a question of, okay, so then what do you do with them? Joely Rodriguez is gone, thank God. I mean, that would have been one name to say, get rid of him. I want him out. But, you know, is there a way that there can be some roster manipulation and we're able to keep both? I don't know. I really don't know if there's going to be a way for them to do that. I think somebody's going to be sent back down.
On the other side, I'm partial to getting Winkowski back into the bullpen. You know, he was kind of a Swiss Army knife. He could be long relief. He could be a high leverage situation type player. He has had experience. We've seen him in that role. And if Criswell needs to be, you know, your four inning opener, it, you know, he seems to be thriving in that role at the moment, right? You know, this is a guy that had an ERA over 5 in his only other, you know, I guess we'll call it major league season, which he had extended exposure. There's no way in your wildest dreams when we picked him up from Tampa that we thought he'd be this far into the season with a sub-2 ERA. And, you know, this is kind of like the Pivetta coming out of the bullpen situation of last year, right? We're like, hey, we might have found something here, you know, a little kind of role that we, you know, cut out for him. Don't change it if it's not broken. You know, Winkowski, we know, have had success kind of any and everywhere we put him. So for me, that's kind of what I'm seeing there, Terry. But was there something else that you wanted to add before you kicked it over to us with your question?
Well, that was the question. But I'll break the tie. I kind of like Winkowski better in the rotation. I mean, he's got a mid-90s fastball. I just think his stuff plays a little bit better than Criswell. Eventually, Criswell will get his you-know-what handed to him by a robust offense.
100%.
I just... someone's just going to sit on him and, you know, everybody knows they're not getting 95, 96. So he's going to get creamed at some point. And perhaps so will Winkowski, but they both have similar ERAs as starters. For Criswell, it's 1.47. For Winkowski, it's 1.69. Chris Wells had close to double the innings Winkowski's had, for what it's worth. But I don't know. I just kind of like Winkowski in that role, and I like his, you know, his mental makeup. I'm a big mental makeup guy. So it is what it is, but Pivetta's definitely coming back this week,
right?
And it's looking like Bayo will be back on Sunday or Monday. He's only going to have one rehab start. Whitlock, if it ever happens, is expected to have multiple rehab starts. So we'll see.
I do not want Garrett Whitlock back in the rotation. I just don't. I'm so done with that process, and I'm so done with the idea of making him a starter and keeping thinking that, you know, the thought that he belongs in the rotation. Maybe he does belong in the rotation, but he's not a starter. He just is not a starter. Why break something that isn't broken? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, damn it. It's so frustrating. We kind of cause these wounds. It's like, oh, don't touch the stove when it's hot, Johnny. Ow! Yeah, that's kind of the situation that we're doing to ourselves, and it's ridiculous. The one thing with Winkowski, because, I mean, I did say that I think Chris Wall will come out. I don't know what Chris Wall looks like when he's shaken. I don't know what it looks like. Does he get really upset? I have no idea. Winkowski, we've already kind of seen that kind of grit on, you know, in his side, in his corner. The one thing I'm hoping he can really work on is the strikeout number, because Terry, you love your punch outs, and Josh Winkowski really isn't doing that. So maybe you need to have a chat with him or something, because one strikeout over three plus, that's just not cutting it. And his last one against the Giants, no strikeouts. So one punch out in his last five innings, two in his last, let's see, two strikeouts in his last 10 and two thirds.
Yeah, I think he'll get there. I just feel like he's going to keep a staff a little bit more off balance than Chris Will will. But getting back to Whitlock real quick, Tanner Houck's rotation spot, totally safe. So is Cutter Crawford's. So is Brian Bayo's when he's back. So that's three. Who am I missing? Nick Pivetta. That's four. So I feel like I'm missing one more, but I guess not. So I guess you could put Whitlock back in as a five starter.
And it's ridiculous, because you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Why? It's just stupid. It's just dumb. Why? No need.
It's literally the, like, nobody, not a single soul, nobody on the planet meme. What if we made Whitlock a starter? And it's like, nobody's asking for this. I don't, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's like being force-fed squash. Nobody wants squash at Thanksgiving. And that's Garrett Whitlock. There's plenty of other nice things to put on the plate.
Can I say one more thing about starters since we're talking about it? I know we talked about Cutter Crawford very briefly. We're talking about numbers, right? In his first five starts, allowed two earned runs, only has one win through his first five games. How embarrassing is that? A 0.66 ERA through April 20th, one win. And then you give up three earned runs the next appearance against the Chicago Cubs. You lose that game. Thankfully, we're able to get him a win in his next appearance after that. But, man, five innings, two hits, six strikeouts, no runs, no win. Five and two-thirds, six strikeouts, two hits allowed, no win. Six innings, one run, non-earned on three hits, no earned runs, seven punchouts, no win. That's like, I mean, these are games like you, these are the things that if, you know, I'm Craig Breslow and I'm Red Sox ownership, I'm like, just get us another bat. If we're really going to try to tell and sell to the Red Sox experience that we're going to try to go for it, that also means making sure you can put a dub on the board, because having that many blank slates left open, that's like an open frame in bowling. They're not pretty. That's just ugly. That should be a win. Six innings, no earned runs. That should be a win. Six innings, one earned run. That was a win, thank God. But five innings, five and two thirds, like open frames. That's like 3 points on the board. Like we should be getting those dubs. All right, my two cents.
I mean, there's two sides to that coin, right? You'll have the player that'll have, you know,
granted, 0.66 ERA and one win, I think, is the extreme end of that coin. But I think, like, Lackey's tenure in Boston, he had averaged like 6+ runs of support. Like in 2018, David Price's average runs of support was, again, like 5 or 6 or 7+. So it really kind of elevated his win total. And so, you know, there it ebbs and flows, right? There's certain guys that just get all the run support, and then there's certain players that tend to not get it. And it is really unfortunate.
Yeah, when I think of players that haven't had a lot of run support, I remember Cliff Lee way back in the day when he had literally no run support and was just, I mean, going 7-8 innings, allowing one earned run. He was getting the loss. It was just stupid in Cleveland. I felt awful for him. He was an absolute
Felix
stud.
Hernandez, DeGrom Roy Halladay, all these guys would just throw up crazy numbers and win like 9 games. And you're like,
yeah. Yeah.
But Terry, who is your stud for the weekend?
I'm going with Vaughn Grissom. His 1-for-8 doesn't look that impressive. His one hit, as I said earlier, did drive in 2 runs and really put the game out of reach. But the thing that I was more impressed with was his defense at second, which we were told could be a little suspect. Now, he didn't get many, if any, starts with the Braves at second base because Ozzie Albies holds that. And he's like the next closest thing to Pedroia. Ozzie Albies is. He's electric with the bat, electric with the defense, and chronic with the injuries. He's like a perfect replica of Dustin Pedroia. In fact, I think he's injured right now. But Grissom's, most of his infield, you know, starts have been at short. And it's a lot harder to play short, I think, than second base. And so we're kind of seeing for the first time whether or not he's going to hold that down. So really no errors to speak of for him. And it wasn't Emmanuel Valdez. So, you know, I like it. And I hope Vaughn Grissom ends up being a pleasant surprise with the Red Sox. It's been a while since we've had a player at that position with some offensive upside, and he could be that guy. That could be one of those sneaky good trades. It's annoying to still be paying $17 million of Chris Sale's salary, but I think we got a player back with some decent upside, and I didn't hate what I saw this series from Grissom.
Charlie.
Yeah, I mean, 0-for-3 in the first game, 1-for-5 with a bomb to deep right field. The one thing I'm a little bit nervous about, and it kind of brought back that memory of his very first home run at Fenway Park with the bat flip. When he flipped that bat, I kind of interpreted that like you just told yourself you just hit a grand slam. I mean, when I saw him running the bases, granted one camera angle, looked like he was like slowing himself up to second base. Obviously, you're walking into second. You're not sliding. But if they're all running hard, I want to assume that that's probably a bases clearing triple if you're really going full bore. The way he flipped his bat reminded me of Josh Donaldson when he used to flip the bat in New York and then end up hitting deep flies to left field. So if you watch that at bat one more time, I saw that and I thought, okay, the way you flipped the bat, it was a grand slam. And then it goes off the wall. You're at second base, and there's a runner at third. Two runners come in. Granted, it's now what? 7-2 at the time, right? Or 5-2? I forget. Because no, it's 5-1. 5-1. Excuse me, 5-1. Because then there was another double after that, and then Devers went yard. But that was the only thing where I really hope that Alex Cora is able to keep him in check and just say, hey, listen. Awesome hit. We want you to have fun. But just make sure that if you're going to be flipping the bat, you know, make sure it's a home run first, because when you flip the bat and you hit a bomb over the monster, I mean, towering over the monster. Yeah. Okay. Sure. You've earned that right. You went 1-for-8 in the series, my friend. Let's just temper expectations a little bit. I want you to do well. I'm so excited that you're here in Boston. I want you to be an absolute star. No one wants you to succeed more than I do. But that being said, I think we just want to be very careful with the bat flipping and whatnot. I get that it's fun, but just something to note.
I would like to see the, you know, home run and other park statistics for that one, because he did hit it to a pretty unique part of Minnesota's ballpark. You have a high fence, deep right field. You know, off the bat, it could have felt like a grand slam. At the very least, it was a big hit and a big moment to kind of, as Terry mentioned, put the game out of reach. The thing that I was most impressed with him this weekend was the no strikeouts, right? This is a very strikeout forward, you know, aspect of the Twins rotation. He was hitting the ball hard all over the yard today, and to see him finally connect on one, have a drop in, I think was very good to see. And you saw a little bit of the relief on his face when he did get to second base. I don't know who was on third when, by the time he pulled into second. Maybe that was an issue as to why he couldn't run a little bit harder. It escaped me. I was watching it on my phone today. I apologize, but this is definitely a player that we're excited about, right? You know, obviously Story played second in years past, but we got a marginalized return on his offensive output, you know, with the multitude of different injuries that he's faced thus far, but definitely somebody to be excited about. Anything else that you gentlemen wanted to add on Vaughn Grissom? Nope. All right, then we'll move it over to my stud for the weekend, the final one to wrap up this segment. It is a brief appearance, but a guy that has lived on, I guess, the stud side of the studs and duds segment. This is Rob Refsnyder. He did not play in all three games. Kind of came in a pinch hit situation in game two, drew a crucial walk to load the bases. And then today went 1-for-2 with a double and an RBI to get the scoring started for the Red Sox, tie the game up at that point in time. I know that wasn't the most impactful, I guess, weekend performance. There weren't a lot of stud performances, as we have kind of touched upon. But I'm just so impressed with the way Refsnyder's been able to come off the pine, off of a fractured toe, and just contribute immediately. Terry has long and rightfully lamented the left-handed heavy aspect of this lineup. And for this player to hit the ground running, contribute, hit extra base hits, this is already his fifth double of the season, I think is just spectacular. He's been contributing in the field, been moving around the outfield as required. Obviously, the bat is, you know, a huge boost. He's still hitting over 300, if I'm not mistaken. You guys will have to keep me honest there. But just wanted to give the guy a shout out. He's playing more than I think either any one of us are comfortable for. I think we slated him in and around 120 games as kind of where we would like to see him. And he's been, you know, in that lineup card a little bit more frequently. So while the guy is still producing, you know, I wanted to give him his credit. His shine. Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, didn't do poorly. Limited sample size here. 1-for-2, had an RBI, drew a walk in the second game. Happy that he's been able to do well, because I admittedly did not think that Rob Refsnyder was going to be doing damage this year. But so far, he's hitting 350 on the year. He's already had five doubles last year. If you want to look at a sample size, hit 250 just under that marker. Had nine doubles in 202 at-bats. He's already at 5 through 37. So already we're, you know, above the average. And he's already had his one triple. He's matched that number from last year. He's at his one home run. He's matched that number from last year. So if we're talking about a game of averages, numbers don't lie. So can you keep up 350? Probably not. That's a pretty difficult number to keep up. That's going to be a hard task, hard order to follow there. But I'll say this much. If he can continue being that kind of squirrely guy that can come in a pinch, be a really good team player, I have no complaints. I don't expect Rob to be here every single day. I don't expect him to have like a, you know, a Tyler O'Neill weekend or series going 4-for-10 with two dingers and six RBIs or something crazy like that. I expect you to play your role and do your job. So if you can do that, come off the bench, get a walk, help your team out, go 1-for-2, knock in a run, do all the important things, the little things, I have no complaints. So great.
Terry.
Here's a stat that's going to impress the hell out of Charlie. Rob Refsnyder's OPS is 45 points higher than Tyler O'Neill's.
You wanted to upset me, didn't you, Terrence?
I don't even know how that's possible. He's only hit one home run, one more double than O'Neill, but
limited sample size and sorry to cut you off, but limited sample size. And, you know, we know that Tyler O'Neill and Robert F. Snyder are not going to have 1,000 OPS by the season. Then I'm pretty sure we're pretty confident that's going to be the case. But I mean, again, enjoy the high. Rob's got it right now. So like that's going to be my mindset. I'm going to be looking at a glass half full. And, you know, we're a couple games over 500. Things are going great. So, like, that's awesome. The fact that he's higher than Tyler O'Neill, even better. You know, great for him. Good for him.
Yeah, I mean, Rev Snyder's impossible to dislike. You know, he really should be just your fourth outfielder. And there were reports this weekend to where he's now the more vocal leader in the clubhouse, with Trevor Story not really being there. And the crazy thing is he's only making $1.5 million, you know, which is nothing, you know, for a major league veteran, but he's been productive. He's been hitting out of the 3 and 4 hole, which is insane to me. I mean, when you think of 3 and 4 hole hitters, you're thinking about Manny Ramirez, David Ortiz, JD Martinez. Mookie led off for the bulk of his time here, but still, that's not a spot you're going to be hitting Rob Ref Snyder under normal circumstances. And on 27, 28, 29 other clubs, he's hitting somewhere between probably 6th and 8th. But it's working. You know, this is the second year where he's kind of made an impact. He puts together good at bats, and it seems like he just moves those base runners along and, you know, just quietly does his job. So again, an impossible guy to hate or dislike.
Just a professional ball player, right? Does the right things, does the little things, makes the contributions, doesn't make, you know, kind of the brain fart plays. But who do we have for the honorable mentions?
Well, a couple stand out. Rafi Devers, 4 for 12, drove in 4 runs throughout the series. I made an observation on Twitter, I think it was on Saturday. It seems like the shoulder problem he had has kind of forced him to be a little bit smarter at the plate, not be swinging out of his shoes all the time. And I think it's led to him putting together some more effective and more disciplined at bats. So he crushed one today. I think he drove one up the gap on, let's see, that must have been Friday, you know, to play a couple of runs. So good to see Devers, you know, being a good, well-rounded hitter right now. Jaron Duran, not a terrible series, 3 for 11, only struck out once, only drew one walk. He had been drawing, you know, a few walks the last few series. So we'll see if he can kind of kick it into a higher gear here as we go forward. And going down the list, Dom Smith, 3 for 12, drove in 2 today. He did have a boneheaded base running play on Saturday, though. Tried to stretch out a single into a double and was out by a mile. Apparently, he apologized to Alex Cora right after. So, but, you know, in a 3-1 game, you kind of hope the base running would be a little smarter.
Yeah.
And then I think this is significant. Finally, Seydon Rafaela had a hit in every game, still had 4 strikeouts. So that needs to come down, but seeing a little bit more progress there, it seems like he's starting to find it. And I've mentioned on a couple of recent shows, a lot more patient in the batter's box. So we'll see if he can kick it into a higher gear as well. Tons of just solid pitching performances. Bernardino, 2 scoreless outings. Weissert continues to be kind of a gem from the Alex Verdugo trade. By the way, Aaron Judge says Verdugo's the best left fielder on the Yankees since Brett Gardner. So high praise from Aaron Judge. But Zach Kelly had one No, I guess that was the previous series. So pretty good outing for Kelly as well. Justin Slayton actually didn't have his normal stellar series. 1 2/3, 3 hits, 1 earned runs, but we'll still take it. He's been solid. Reese McGuire, 2 for 7. A lot of just guys that were okay outside of Devers and I'd say Rafaela. No one really crushed it.
So I'll say this much first, Adon Rafael. I mean, guys leading the team in RBIs, which no one would have thought was possible. And over his last seven games, he has 7 total RBIs. So that's another fun little fluffy stat. Granted, they were all in one game. But hey, we're going to look at a glass half full because that was the big crazy 17-0 game. He had 7 RBIs, just couldn't do any wrong. I'm actually trying to take a look at it. So I'm looking at each Major League Baseball stadium and where that ball was. Cody, to your point, there are a couple stadiums that if Von Grissom had hit it there, it would have been a grand slam. Not every stadium, but in some of them. And I'm still trying to figure out. I think it was like Baseball Savant where you could layer all of the stadiums on top of each other. But I'm trying to find that that link to where I can see where that ball was. If we can see 365, where it would have been in relation to some of the other stadiums and whatnot. Because I'm pretty sure we're probably going to see probably 7 to 9 minimum stadiums that would have been a home run. So yeah, but again, like I defer back to that original comment of that was your only hit. 2 runs came in. We just got to be very smart about the bat flips. Like that, you just don't want to get into, Josh Donaldson areas where you're bat flipping for flyouts. It looks silly.
No disagreements there. Anything else you gentlemen wanted to add in terms of honorable mentions? Nope.
Oh, yeah. Actually, one more thing. Jaron Duran, I don't know what you're putting in your juice, but you run like a lizard and it's creepy as hell, crazy as hell, but fun as hell. And no one can catch you. This is he had single, double, triple in the third game real quick. And watching him run, I was interacting with a couple of folks on Twitter/X and we're all just having fun with it. Like I don't think you could copy that in Major League Baseball, the show, like the baseball video game, the way he like, it's just the goofiest thing. So if you like look at a lizard running, it's literally Jaron Duran with a Red Sox uniform. That's it. I'll leave it there.
I know what you mean, because with that type of a gait, you wouldn't think he would be as fast as he is, but he is.
It's goofy. And when he's going, I mean, the motor is there. It is wild.
Yeah.
Super fun to see.
I listened to whoever the lead broadcaster is for the Twins. He pulled one down that right field line and the ball got halfway down. And the announcer was like, well, that's with Duran. This is probably going to be a triple. Yep. There he goes, headed for third.
Yep. Like, and it was uncontested, you're just not, I mean, he rounded third base standing up.
He did. Yeah.
That's the type of speed you have with that guy. There are very few people that can do that. And we talked about this recently, like how many doubles do we think that Jaron Duran can get? Could he be could Jaron Duran be a 2020 guy? 20 doubles, 20 triples, 20 homers, 20 stolen bases. I think it's possible that you see maybe 3 out of those 4. I think 20 doubles, 20 stolen bases, easy. Those are shoo-ins. 20 triples, gonna be kind of hard. 20 home runs, I don't know.
I don't.
Man, that would be fun to see. That'd be fun to see.
I'm pulling it up right now, but I don't think anybody's ever had.
Brandon Phillips did.
Has he? Okay.
I'm pretty sure Brandon Phillips was the guy that had 20-20-20-20. Let me see if I can find it. Hold on. Maybe I'm mistaken. Hold on. I apologize if I'm wrong. Let me see.
Interesting statistic. Jaron Duran still doubles. Doesn't have an inside the park home run yet.
Yeah, but he gave up one. Sorry, Jaron. He actually had a 20-20-20. Did not have 20 triples. I'm thinking of somebody else. I'm not sure who it was.
Billy Hamilton, maybe?
No, Hamilton couldn't hit dingers. He's had the 20-20-20 multiple times. He's had 20 homers, 20 doubles, and 20 stolen bases. He did that in 2007, 2008, and 2009. And after that, he never hit 20 home runs again in the season. But there was someone I could have sworn I remember them hitting 20 doubles, 20 triples, which is just crazy. in a season. I'll have to look it up and get back to you.
Well, I've gone through last year, so that's Bobby Witt led the league with only 11 triples. Season before that, Ahmed Rosario, of all people, led the league with 9. Let's go to 2021. I'll stop at this one.
I could be completely wrong.
Yeah, Shohei, well, there was a three-way tie for the most triples in 2021, and it was only 8, but it was Shohei Ohtani, David Peralta, and Brian Reynolds. So I'd be shocked if we ever see 20.
I'm looking it up. Curtis Granderson had 23 in 2007.
Really?
That was insane. Yeah, Jimmy. Oh, maybe it was Jimmy Rollins. Hold on, let me see. Now I'm very curious. Jimmy Rollins. Yes. Jimmy Rollins, 38 doubles, 20 homers, 30 triples, 41 stolen bases. 20.
Jeez.
That's no. 38 doubles, 20 triples, 30 homers, 41 stolen bases. That is bonkers.
Okay.
That's crazy. Anyways, I'm going to be quiet now.
Had to be his MVP season.
One last honorable mention. Angel Hernandez was a ghost this whole series. Didn't really know. He was behind the plate today. Was at second base on Saturday. So wasn't really a presence. There was no controversy. So just wanted to throw that out there.
For the record, Curtis Granderson in 07 also was a part of the 2020-2020 club. 38 doubles, 23 dingers, 23 triples, and 26 stolen bases. So it's been done before, which means it could happen again. Coincidentally, it happened the same year that Jimmy Rollins won his MVP, to Cody's credit.
20 triples is a lot. And a tip of the cap to Angel Hernandez, he often doesn't get it. So when he does have, I guess, a stud-worthy performance, it is good to give him some shine. But that'll wrap it for us here today. Thank you all for joining us. Have a great day and take care.